Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
Hey everybody, what's up? Chad Wesley Smith here. Another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. I'm joined, as always, by mischievous Max Fontana. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty well.
And our good friend, our guest today, the young Padawan himself, Zachary Bartel. Zach, how you doing, buddy?
Doing really well. Thanks for having me.
You can tell we're pretty desperate.
It's a dream come true.
Today's episode is brought to you by Adolescence and Athlete Motivation. It's a lifestyle. We're just been getting fired up off of a young Zach's old YouTube motivational videos, which, yes, will be linked for your enjoyment. You're welcome for the views.
Would you say that was your first career, was a motivational speaker?
You know, I wanted to be a fitness YouTuber before it was cool, so.
I actually do want to get into this a little bit, because you're 22 years old.
Yes.
Now, right? And to Max and I think you're still 12, even though we haven't known you since you were 12. But to give some context to who Zach is and why he's joining us today, I've probably known you since you were like 16,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah, just
about. And you were this chubby little high school football player from the city of Irvine, where I am, though he went to the shitty school.
Yeah. We're better at sports.
The streets of Irvine.
When I was coaching, we beat you like 50-14. So, and we're better at math, the stuff that really matters.
This is true.
Yeah, and I'm better at sports too. But so this chubby little really pulley of a boy, but got into powerlifting, came and worked at the gym, and now have a gym all of your own. SoCal, yep. Powerlifting, good call on the T-shirt.
That's branding.
Yeah.
It's everything good. Right there.
Yeah. This is a pro. He's a pro.
We'll edit that out shortly for that.
And just someone who's very passionate about what he does is coaching athletes, you know, competing at USPA, then USAPL, coached lifters in person, online, opened your own gym. So there's a lot of stuff that we want to talk to you about. We're going to make fun of you a lot along the way, but yeah, that's what big brothers are. That's what big brothers are for. So tell us just kind of how you got into powerlifting in the first place.
Yeah, so I got into it because I wanted to lose weight. So my whole life I was overweight, and I was just kind of sick of that. And there was never really a moment where, before I was in high school, where I was like, let's do this. Now it was more like right time, right place. Kind of wanted girls to like me. So I was like, all right, I want to do this thing.
That's why most people, I think, get into lifting. It doesn't necessarily happen that much, but you probably get a lot of dudes who are like, whoa, bro, your pecs are so badass.
Once you start getting muscular, it's more dudes than girls. Yeah, yeah, exactly. But so I was roughly like 16. I was like 245, but like fluffy. And I went from...
We'll find a picture for B-roll.
There's plenty of pictures.
We have a lot of good B-roll in this episode.
Just link it to his Tinder account.
We went from 245 to 185, 187 was my lightest. And then from there, I was like, you know, I like lifting. I enjoy this thing. And I knew after high school I wanted to continue to partake in a sport or compete in something. And I knew I was strong, very unathletic, but strong. And powerlifting kind of seemed like the answer for me.
That's the classic powerlifting answer.
Yeah.
Like, especially you're playing football and you're like the guy who wants to stay in the weight room for like 2 hours more. And like running is not really the thing, coordination, but you're like powerlifting, I found my calling. As many people.
No one's ever turned down a D1 scholarship because they had a chance to go to the Cincinnati Pro-Am.
But what was cool is my offensive line coach when I was a junior in high school was Alex Parsons, who you trained, and he was a buddy of yours too. And he, for those unfamiliar, he played for the Raiders, great football player. He was getting coached and trained to go back to playing in the NFL by Keith Enderline, who was one of your interns, one of your original interns. And
The original intern.
And Keith immediately took me under his wing. He saw me working hard in the weight room, saw the grit, the passion, and immediately started coaching me and training me in a way that was really good at a young age. So I didn't have to really mess around with doing 10 by 10 squats or thinking I had to be in the weight room for 6 hours. I had good training from the start, which was, I got very lucky. And so he helped push me to do my first meet when I was 17. I did a push-pull. We didn't squat yet. Then eventually I did the USPA Nationals for the first time that summer and continued to go until I did my first USAPL meet in 2015, where then I kind of switched over and saw that.
So what ended up being your best lift so far?
So my best lifts would be a 550 squat, 413 bench, and 618 deadlift all in competition. The best squat came in April of 2017. Since then, just been battling some chronic knee issues, trying to...
And that was as a 105?
Yeah, 105, right. Exactly. Yeah.
And so you're only 22, so you were 20 or 21 when you made those?
I was 20 and 21. I was 20 when I hit the squat, and I was 21 when I hit the bench and deadlift.
Mike Sell voice over here. Yeah. Settle down. All right, settle down. we'll talk a little bit more about your injury, but you've had these ongoing knee problems, I mean, since you were, like 15 or something?
Even younger. I mean, I dislocated my kneecap, I remember I was playing tetherball in elementary school, and I just twisted.
Tetherball injuries are vicious.
Yes. Violent game of tetherball.
Very violent game. Then dodgeball after that, and eventually in football, the cutting, twisting, I dislocated the kneecap roughly 8 to 10 times. Yeah. So not good stuff.
You just had a pretty substantial surgery.
Yes. So, really, I had dislocated the kneecap a bunch of times, got into powerlifting, had always been battling knee pain. I mean, every squat session, every deadlift session was coupled with Advil, Icy Hot, all of it. And eventually just got to the point where the pain was just too much. And
Your double knee sleeve.
Oh, that's, yeah. That was the, I had an SPD knee sleeve, like an Iron Rebel compression cup over the knee sleeve. It just got to the point where I was like, I'm not going to be able to walk when I'm 30.
The thing you notice about Bartel the first time you see him wear tights is that his knee is the thickest part of his leg. And when he has two knee sleeves on, it almost looks like a normal leg.
Well, I live with knee sleeves on now.
So what was the name of the surgery?
So yeah, so there's a couple pieces to it. There's a tibial osteotomy. There's MACI, which is an acronym for pretty much a cartilage transfer procedure where they took out my own cartilage 12 weeks before this operation via an arthroscopy and replanted in those cells after they had grown more of it with stem cells. So pretty cool stuff. And then they also reconstructed my MPFL, which is the ligament that holds the patella in place from dislocating laterally. So did all of those things, and that was 5 weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
So obviously with this very substantial knee surgery, your own lifting career, a competitive career, is on hold for the moment, but yep, you're coaching a lot of lifters. Yep. So, if we were to back up a couple years, you're working at the gym and getting, teaching some of the classes for me and getting your own little group of lifters going.
Barbarians.
Yes, Bartel's Barbarians. Yes. That's a TMCWS name, so don't be trying to make any shirts for that. You'll hear from my lawyers. But you built up your little group, and then when I decided to close the gym, you decided to open a gym.
Yes.
So you were 20 or 21 then?
I was 20.
And despite the advice of your elders, you went ahead and did this anyway. So tell us about the impetus for you to want to open your own gym and why you did that, even when people tell you not to.
Yeah. So, definitely heard from, I thought in my head I was not going to own a gym. I thought gyms weren't really profitable. I saw more of where I was going to be in the coaching aspect. But when it came time for the location to close, I had these lifters that I felt they needed a place to train and kind of like field of dreams. If you build it, they will come. And mm-hmm. So I was like, I figured out a way to make this happen and decided to just pull the trigger. And the way I saw it was, worst case scenario, I'm going to have a sick garage gym one of these days. So, it just something told me to do it. I followed my gut feeling. It was the same feeling I had where instead of going off to college, I felt like what we were doing at the gym was good. It actually kept me from going out of state for college and doing that. I was more focused on what was going on at Juggernaut. So it's just, I've always felt like, you know, to follow my gut and do what I think is right, and hopefully, you know, things pan out.
Yeah, and as I've told you before, I mean, a ton of, even though Max and I had told you some parts of what you did were mistakes, and they were, but overall, the idea of going out and actually doing what you're passionate about. There's so many people who, you know, they whatever it is, they want to own their own gym, they want to be a coach, they want to do YouTube, they want to do podcasts, they want to whatever it is. They just talk about it, and it's so easy to just talk about it, but very, very few people are willing to take the leap, take the risk, and actually follow through on this stuff, let alone when they're 20, 21 years old, still in college, all this stuff. So, you know, always commend you for that.
Do you think a lot of that, do you think a lot of the reason why you did it was, or like that your inexperience in it that had lent itself to you being in a different place when you actually started doing it? I think a lot of people, like, you know, when they have experience with stuff, they kind of shy away from it, but you're kind of like going into it
green.
Yeah, totally green. You think that helped?
Yeah, I hadn't failed before. I mean, really at anything in like as far as employment opportunities go or anything like that. And so I think I really didn't see a negative. I luckily, the way I set it up, there wasn't too much financial risk. Yeah. I did my best to not have that happen, and just slowly kind of added things as we went. And I think, the lack of experience was probably to my benefit, and it helped me not be scared. A lot of people are scared something that I've taken away is when you're assessing risk, one of the things I like to use is, you look at what's the worst case scenario, what's the best case scenario, and what's likely going to happen. If you can handle the worst case scenario, okay, then go for it. And so, you know, like I said, worst case scenario, cool garage gym. Mm-hmm. So why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. And definitely when you are young, taking some of those risks may be a bit easier because you don't have people relying on you to the same degree.
Or kids or family or anything.
Yeah. But it can also be, it could be a bit more daunting because you don't have the experience, but
yeah,
at the same time, maybe ignorance is bliss.
Yes.
And you don't even know, you know, what you're getting into. Because I started Juggernaut when I was 22, and I say we wrote what we thought was a business plan to start, but I had no idea what that actually meant.
Yeah.
So what has been the biggest surprise to you in running SoCal Powerlifting so far?
The biggest surprise, to be honest, that it's grown to what it is. I was going through my notes on my phone the other day to about like a year ago. I was looking for something and I saw some goals I set out for the gym, and it was like, oh, have 30 coached members and have a coach that works at the gym. And we now have over 60 active coach members, have multiple coaches, and it's just grown bigger and faster than I ever thought it would. That, and I mean, out of surprises go, that's pretty good. I knew I was expecting to work hard. I was expecting to be in the gym for a lot of hours a day. And I definitely did those things. But I'd say the biggest surprise was how well we've done and the community that's been built thus far. Yeah.
What would you say is, if you, people ask a lot of times, probably Chad gets this question a ton, but people ask about business and this stuff, which is always odd to me because, like, to me, this is fitness and coaching and stuff. But what would you say if someone new was to say, hey, you know, Zach, what's your recommendation for me? What advice could you give me to prevent me from making, like, the biggest mistakes you made doing this?
I think it's going to come back to follow your gut and follow your passion. You're going to have people tell you, most people are not entrepreneurial, and they're going to tell you, you know, you want the safe job, you want the 401k, and really, I feel like deep down people know themselves, and there's definitely people that are fit for that, and I was not one of them. So it's definitely going to be follow your gut and follow the passion. Something that I've always kind of gone back and forth with is, you know, when running a business, you want the business to grow. I mean, the goal of a business is to grow and profit. But I've always reverted back to, for the business to grow, I just have to do a damn good job. And it always comes back to, I'm going to put all of my passion and all of my energy into the coaching, doing it just a really good job, and the business grows because of that.
So you now have 60 lifters that you coach at the gym, and then another good group online.
Yeah, so I work with over 30 online clients right now. I have another, like at the gym, it's like another 40 of my own, and then I have coaches as well who I'm helping them, working with them, getting them clients, and doing that.
So, as you, if you had to kind of sum up Bartel Barbarian, you know, style of coaching, or sort of the big trademarks of it, what would those be?
Yeah, so I'm a firm believer that like coaches coach a lot like their coaches, and almost, you know, most people, like I have had multiple coaches over a period of time, one of them being the marvelous Max Ada. And I've derived a lot of my philosophies from Keith, my first coach, from Max, from you, and from Juggernaut, and also from some other coaches I've worked with. And I'd say the biggest thing is, you know, I coach in a similar style as what you guys do. It's very linear. We do a lot of we do hypertrophy, strength, peaking, off season. I believe in a long term plan, not just focusing on, okay, this meet's in 12 weeks, we're gonna go all out. I don't think all meets are created equal. I think really what creates a great lifter is how long they can be great and how long they can stay in the sport. Because you have a lot of people burning out, hurting themselves because they're just focused on where I want to be in 10 weeks, where I want to be in 12. What about 48? What about 60? What about 2 years? Where do you want to be? And so what I try to do is take a long-term approach with the goal, number one, is staying healthy. Myself, I've battled with a lot of injuries, and goal number two is make progress and see results, because that's what we're in. We're in the results-oriented industry, so definitely.
What's been the biggest difference for you thinking about your own competing, like being a competitor versus a coach?
Yeah, so I used to...
And to build on that, as this injury has taken you away from competing to be only a coach, have you noticed it's a lot harder to try and compete and coach versus just coach?
Yeah. So to just at first, I had what you would call an athlete first mindset, up until about maybe a year and a half ago, when I really started dealing with this stuff. So that was, training came first before anything else, before my coaching program writing, before working the front desk. It was training and being the best I can be at powerlifting. And sort of when that was beginning to start slipping away from me, as far as dealing with the injuries, not being able to train how I wanted, I started to realize that I had put all of my eggs in this basket of lifting and powerlifting, and just, I identified myself as Zach the powerlifter, not Zach the coach, the business owner, the brother, whatever it is, right? And so then what I realized is you can't define yourself by something external like powerlifting. It has to be a multitude of things, and realize, you know, who you really are. I know we're getting deep here, but once the injury started coming in, what I had so much more energy and fire to really coach, because I knew that was something I could do long term. I mean, Max, I'm sure you've gone through the same thing with your wrist injury. It's just you pretty much accept the reality, and that's just, it is what it is. And then I did whatever I could to still ignite that fire and passion. And for me, that was coaching. And, you know, hopefully one day it is lifting and competing again. But I've fully accepted the fact that if that's not the case, then I'm happy I can coach.
So as you look, you're what, a year and a half in, 2 years in almost?
Year and a half, yeah.
Yeah. Year and a half into SoCal powerlifting, do you have five-year goal, 10-year goals of where you'd like to see it?
Yeah, I have looked at it a little bit. Honestly, I really take it day by day. You know, this is definitely something I want to do long term. I haven't really made a decision whether I want to do something where I make multiple locations, do all these things. I like the community aspect. I like the where we're at now, and I'd like to keep growing SoCal Powerlifting as an entire brand, working with more people online, doing more events. And I don't know if opening 5-10 locations is something I necessarily want to do. I enjoy powerlifting and I want to continue to coach powerlifting, but, and I don't want to create, because I feel like once you get to a point where you have all these things going on, it's easy to lose sight of why you started and where you started.
And lose the quality.
Yeah.
You probably want to think about having two before you thought about having five.
Yes.
Yeah.
By the way.
Yeah.
But
Do you,
luck can happen in 5 years.
Do you ever hear anyone saying they want to go D1, but they're not doing the things they need to get there? Or?
Oh, yeah. You always got those talented athletes, you know, they're talented, but they don't.
What is it that helps them get there?
Oh, the weight room.
I'm sure even as you look back at a year and a half ago, it probably seems like a very long time ago, like you've had a lot of life experience since then, because I know in 2019, coming up here, probably when this episode is released, we'll be coming up on the 10-year anniversary of Juggernaut, and it might as well be 10 lifetimes ago. And so it'll be, I'm excited for you and so happy that it's going so well and everything. It's fun to go over there and see you have your people doing well and lifting well at meets and all that stuff, because, you know, obviously you're very passionate about it, so it's exciting to see you do well with that. Let's see, what other things do we want to talk to this kid about?
What kind of advice would you give people that are getting into powerlifting?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing is when you have new lifters getting into powerlifting, I think the most valuable thing you can do is, one, find a coach, find someone with more experience than you, and, you know, stop running 5x5 and strong lifts. And I talked to a guy who had been running Johnny Candido's 8-week program for a year straight. And
it's only 8 weeks long, though.
Yeah, but he just does it over and over again. And I think the biggest thing is working with a coach. I find coaching in all aspects of life very valuable, and I would say it's worth it. And I would also say focus, like I said, on the long term. You know, we live in a society where it's all about making the next buck, doing the next big thing, getting the next car, where you don't really live in the now and you don't really look at where you want to be 2 years from now, 3 years from now. And that's what's going to keep you in the game. When you just focus on getting better now and getting, like, being the strongest you are in 10 weeks at this local meet that doesn't really matter, you put yourself at risk for things, risk for burnout, injury, whatever it is. And so I think definitely taking a long-term view is really important.
Things that something I've since I've known you, you've made, you know, radical changes to your persona and who you are and all these things. You've grown a lot, mostly like in the chest. But what's interesting to me is that you see a lot of times Bartel is one of those guys who in the gym when he was there, he was always the guy that's kind of the low man on the totem pole, getting a lot of shit from everybody, and for the most part deserving all of it. But but also he let it roll off his back, I think, a lot, and maybe took some of it, you know, to heart and did things differently. But
have you observed this weird dynamic in which, because if we're around Zach or around Quinn, we make fun of them.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. Now they're around each other and try and make fun of each other.
Yeah.
And it's a weird ecosystem that I'm not very comfortable with.
And it doesn't, I think they're striving, they're struggling so hard.
They're trying to push the other one down a little bit.
They know if they can just get on top and be the dominant one, then they've succeeded, right?
Yeah.
They can come back to us and then no longer be the guy who gets made fun of.
Yeah. Well, it's because if they're around us at the same time, they got to decide.
Yeah, someone's got to be the guy who gets shit on.
The,
right?
The Jerry.
Right?
And someone's got to be the Jerry.
For sure.
Asher will like that reference.
But the big thing I was saying is that you're being in that position a lot of times when you let yourself be, you know, criticized or whatever, you let yourself kind of get into that role of being taught sort of trial by fire by the people around you, you end up in a place where you get really, really... Those guys are the guys that always do really well later on because they got everyone gave them a chance to get better.
Yeah.
You know, if you walk in and you're the guy that no one really ever, you know, gives a hard time to or tells you you're doing it wrong or right or whatever, like you never really grow beyond that. So I think it's cool to see that. And also you're welcome.
Well, we kid because we care.
Yeah.
Well, and just to add on top
actually,
of that.
Actually, I think Chad was still talking. So
just to talk about that real quick. I think that did contribute to a lot of like the success I've had in as a coach, as a lifter, as a business owner. Because I not much was like necessarily handed to me, right? You know, you guys never like just said like gave me this crazy opportunity to do this. You know what I mean? It's like I felt like I earned everything,
yeah.
And I think that's really important to not have this sense of entitlement. You know, I was young, I was 17, 18 in Juggernaut. I was so grateful just to be there, to be training, to be learning from you guys. And really, that alone, it just made me work harder. It made me realize, dang, this is a high, like this is a standard. I'm gonna rise to this standard. I want to be like these guys, you know, as I grow.
Well, you got really close to it too.
Yeah.
You almost got there.
I think this kind of reminds me of our conversation with Mike Wudengo.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you haven't listened to that episode, go back and do it. It's probably from March or something. But he was talking about, you know, living in the storage closet at the University of Pittsburgh, like sleeping on an air mattress, only being able to afford like the Domino's $5 deals and stuff. But that's how he got to learn from Buddy Morris and James Smith.
Yeah.
And it's so, you know, not to be old man on the porch, kids these days, but, you know, kids these days. So many of them want this shit for free. They want this perfectly, you know, put together. You know, here's the handout. Here's the roadmap for you to follow to learn things. And you did it, I think, much more in the way that Max and I had to do a lot of things, and the way that you probably learn better, and it makes all the experiences more valuable. Where,
yeah,
you know, you're gonna pay to learn by cleaning the bathrooms or setting up, yeah, chairs or breaking down weights, whatever it is, but you also get the real experience and get to learn a lot about that stuff. So something I think you have a unique perspective on, being 22, I don't know if that makes you a millennial. I don't know if I'm a millennial. I don't really
know.
You grew up very much, and as evidenced by your YouTube motivational videos,
yes,
you were making at age 16. Very much in the age of the social media lifting, but Max and I have hardened you with our cynicism,
yes,
towards everything. So you can kind of see both sides of it.
Yeah.
But as you look at people who kind of grew up the same way as you, and they watch Rich Piana videos or whatever. I know that was one of your favorites.
Maybe.
what
His
do
arms
you,
were just so big.
What do you think were maybe some useful things that you learned from there, and some things that you wish you could go back and be like, shake, you know, slap 17-year-old Zach and be like, fucking stop it.
You know? I mean, so as the age of information and technology goes, and with social media, there's so much information. There's just so much, you know, content being produced. And when you're young and naive and green, you don't know what's right and what's wrong. And so it's hard to decipher what to do, and you end up just doing it all. I mean, Max, I think you just kind of like how you watched some online or not online, you watched some videos on TV on weightlifting, and then you went and just lifted, right?
Yeah.
It's the same concept. I'd read an article here. It might have been written by Chad, or it might have been written by Joe Schmo, who has huge biceps, and then he talked about the eight hour arm workout, and
yeah,
I went
yeah.
and hit it hard, you know? So I'd say definitely... I'd say most valuable thing is also the least valuable thing, is which is just all this information. What is right? What is wrong? I mean, I did a lot of baloney workouts, doing calf raises and dumbell shrugging.
Yeah, maybe you should have done a couple more of those,
yeah,
buddy.
Dumbbell shrugging or dumbbell like lateral raising 70 pounds with just a ton of like body English. And
that's an actual exercise I found.
Yeah.
Dad and I both were coached on 80 pound.
Yeah, but I at the same time, I think social media has done a great job of making you realize, you know, what the great people are doing. I do think it does a disservice, though, because obviously social media is a highlight reel. And, you know, you only see the lifters working up to these top singles, these big heavy lifts. You don't see their sets of 8 to 10. They're grinding through an hypertrophy block, their off-season training. They're not necessarily highlighting those things. And so I feel like that can be lost, and that makes, you know, it just makes a lifter just think about these doing 1 rep maxes every day. And that's something I see with people my age. I've worked with like some lifters from the UCI powerlifting team club. and a couple other schools and stuff. And a lot of those guys, I mean, not my guys, but a lot of the other guys are just focused on, let's work up to this heavy deadlift today and post it on social media because everyone's here at the gym and I want to do this in front of everyone, not because this is on my program, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And I think that short-sighted mentality is what leads to a lot of burnout and injury.
Hey, so he's just a little wise man boy. Like a miniature Buddha.
He's grown up almost. Almost fully.
Yes, wise beyond your years.
Appreciate that.
We'll only take all the credit for that.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
All right. So what's some exciting stuff going on in SoCal Powerlifting that people should be on the lookout for?
Yeah. So we have a couple meets coming up. We have a USPA meet January 13th. We have a USAPL meet March 31st. And we're just gonna continue to be there in the community, giving back. I try to have a sponsor a lot of the local meets. You know, I just want to be known as like the local presence of powerlifting and to give back to the sport and to the lifters. So you can keep an eye out for us. We're located in Newport Beach, California. If you're ever in the area visiting or need a place to train, we got all the cool equipment. So definitely just gonna keep going forward and continue to coach and just do a good job.
Where can they find you and follow you and all that?
So on the Instagrams, I am at Bartel Barbell. And then
it's very convenient that that was your name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bartel Barbell, it works, right? Yeah. And then you can also find us at @SoCal_powerlifting for the gym page.
And also Zach Bartel on YouTube.
Oh, and Zach Bartel on YouTube.
Unless you're one of the 33 subscribers that it's already.
I have 33 subscribers. Can I monetize that yet?
It's gonna be going up soon. You guys are gonna want to start out with athlete motivation and motivation: be the best.
Mindset is
videos.
Key is a good one as well. Yeah. Why just women should lift.
Ready.
Look at that clickbait.
Be exploding with motivation, like. You should just preload the bar with a new PR.
Yeah.
Preload the bar with a new PR.
Yeah.
Well, it rhymes. Yeah. Bars.
It's just, the music's in
my
head.
It just continues to go, always.
But as much as shit as we give you, we really are very proud of you, Zach.
Yeah.
So, follow Zach, follow SoCal Powerlifting. If you're in the area, go over there and train. If you're interested in online coaching from adults, you can check out Juggernaut for that, especially AI coaching, which is like a mean robot version of me in your hand. But the app coming early 2019, probably not by the time this podcast is out, but hopefully not too long after. Max?
You can find me on Instagram, max_Ada, or on Facebook, or you can email me, max@jtsstrength.com.
Yeah, so all the online coaching stuff at jtsstrength.com, books from Max and I, all that stuff. Subscribe to the Jug Life podcast. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Write us something funny or nice. We always appreciate that, and it helps more people find the show. Subscribe on YouTube. I don't know how many videos a week that we'll be releasing at this time, but whatever they are, they're going to be the fucking best ones on the whole website, so subscribe. I'm Chad Wesley Smith at Chad Wesley Smith and at Juggernaut Training on Facebook and Instagram. Thanks for watching, Zachary.
Thank you very much for having me.
Do you have a direct? Should we just put your phone number up on the screen?
Yeah.
For the ladies.
Yeah, for the ladies.
There's 4% women that.
4%. So out of 10, that we're looking at women. Points. Yeah.
A fourth of one.
A quarter of a woman.
We might be up on that. Let's see.
The analytics will show us here.
Don't lie.
The women one's in pink, I think, when you get on here.
Gender. No data. That must mean there's just not enough.
It's non-binary.
Well, it was funny. It's the same. Quinn had me do this reading exercise thing with my leg, and I can't even extend it to the point where it can make a reading.
Oh, 12.9% female. You're set.
Okay.
You're going to get
at least one out of 10.
Well, I'm going to say probably 12%. That's probably a lot of the.
I'd say
the
you
coach.
Could get 1.29 dates out of this.
That's more dates than I've
known. Congratulations.
Yeah, you're definitely. Welcome. Winning.
All right, Zach, thanks for coming on. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.